to our north up in the Milwaukee area. Nothing here right now. 70 Racine, 71 Kenosha, 69 for Burlington, Elkhart, and Lake Geneva. Humidity 78%. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. And it is the eve of yet another Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival in Kenosha. And we're excited for part one of today's program to have with us in the studios Tim Mahone, who is, the brains and the brawn behind this amazing event. He puts this together each and every year, and it's always extraordinarily fun and exciting. And there's a great lineup of wonderful musicians, and we're going to hear from several of them in part two of today's program, the New Blue Band, featuring a fabulous singer by the name of Carlise Guy, and her dad is the legendary guitarist Buddy Guy. We recorded a conversation yesterday, and you'll hear a little sample of their music making as well in part two of today's program. Last week, we heard from one of the musicians who's also going to be singing on the program. But in part one of today's program, we're going to be also talking about another facet of this event, which is such fun. It is when we get to enjoy the exploits and expertise of two different talented chefs, and we're going to be meeting both of them today as well, Chef Daniel Bonanno and a guest chef, Pierre Tyson, who's actually a graduate of the culinary program here at Gateway Technical College. Pierre is sitting right here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. And Daniel Bonanno, are you still with us on the phone line?
Yes, I am.
Great.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Tim, let's talk first with you. It has to be, I suppose, relatively brief. We got a lot to get through, but just sketch the scope of this event and also why it was put together, the very two special people that it honors.
First of all, thank you very much. Good to be with you again. I must tell you, I'm the voice of this today and with our two chefs, but we have approximately 90 volunteers that will descend on the celebration place tomorrow. So I'm clearly not the bronze of this. There's a lot of energy and teamwork that's ready to provide and welcome our guests to Celebration Place tomorrow. But clearly, this is on behalf of my mother and father who've worked so hard to uplift Kenosha and provide opportunity for our kids and families so they could clearly be the best they could be and the community could come together. And so we use music, of course, and in this case now the cooking studio, to combine those two things to raise money so we can provide scholarships to kids in a nutshell. And we've been able to provide 216 scholarships to kids going off to college. So this celebration of music and food is all about uplifting children so they could come back and in turn give back to their communities. And what a better place to do it than Kenosha and this terrific lakefront and the quality music that we get as a response to what our fans are looking for. You know, we have some real sophisticated fans who love quality food and good quality music. And so we get a mixture of genres of jazz and some quality grassroots soulful blues. And so this year is none like the other. It's equally exceptional and exciting, riveting. Folks will be dancing. And like I said, last year, Rebirth is back again to send waves all the way across Lake Michigan to the other side of the lake.
Sounds fantastic. Sounds fantastic. How many of these have there been?
You know, I'm forgetting after 10 years. I think this is 12, I believe.
I was going to say, I know we've passed the 10-year mark. And, of course, that's really, really cool. And to think about how this event has grown, although it wasn't exactly a modest little hesitant affair the first time out. I mean, you started big and have only gotten bigger. I mean, bigger and better over the years.
We're from Wisconsin, but we like to think like we're from Texas and do things big. And so we started with Ramsey Lewis, and unfortunately, with some things we didn't have control of, and that is the weather, and it was a bad day. The first one was absolutely, it was canceled. And so we used that as the energy with our kids. It's always about our youth. And so the kids stayed around and talked to our guests. We've had our vendors. And ever since then, everybody has dedicated this particular third weekend in August to this event. And so we're very proud that we've grown it, not just here out of Kenosha, but more and more people are coming from Antioch and Libertyville and Chicago and Lincolnshire and Downers Grove and Barrington. So we've broadened our regionality for this event to bring people to this great community. And that's the fun thing about Kenosha. It drives people from both sides of this community into our community. And so we've been very pleased with that and very excited about how our fans have accepted the program that we've put together, particularly when it honors kids.
Right, absolutely. And whatever differences people might have, a lot of those differences start to fall away when you start talking about that. It was several years ago, I think, that for the first time you folded food into the proceedings. I mean, you've always sold food, of course, but this idea of the cooking studio was a wonderful idea. And did it start with Dan Bonanno?
It did.
That's what I thought.
I'll let Dan get in there because he's really excited about it. But, you know, we've traveled a variety of festivals, and we're always looking for ways to grow this festival and keep it unique. And we happened to catch at the Taste of Chicago a very nice cooking demonstration that brought people together around food and wine. And we said we ought to try this because we saw the interaction of people and how they want to go home and try specialty items, like myself who doesn't cook. And so we thought that that would be a nice element to grow the fest, right? For all the culinary aficionados that are out there, for all those people who can't boil water, you know, there's a space for everybody out there to feel like this works for them. And this has been nothing but magical because Dan, we approached Dan, another local, you know, we like to feature our local folks, right? And his success in Madison, and he'll get into that. He joined our team, was able to bring his expertise and help us grow that spirit. And so we've been able to integrate cooking at a high quality level and make it interactive. They ask questions. Dan has been very patient to demonstrate his culinary expertise. in a common way that the average person can understand.
Absolutely. Dan, we appreciate you joining us today. You are the co-owner of Pig in a Fur Coat, which is a highly regarded restaurant in Madison. And you're a Kenosha boy, too. Tell us just briefly about when serious cooking sort of entered your life for the first time.
I was probably around 2 years old, maybe. possibly. My dad runs Tenuta's Liquor and Deli, so I don't know. Food's always been a part of my life. And I don't know. I really took it seriously probably around when I was 16. And I started looking for culinary schools to go to college, basically. So straight out of high school, I went straight to culinary school and right into the workforce.
I remember I've interviewed a chef who liked to cook for his football teammates. Was that you, or is that another chef?
I was more of a wrestler than the football player.
Okay. Well, wrestlers need to eat, too.
Yeah. So I used to do that. You know, they used to come over and, I used to make some pasta and whatnot and leave the dishes for my parents to do. So they used to love that. As a young kid, I used to, I never stopped cooking. I used to make my parents breakfast in bed and for, like, their birthdays and stuff like that. So I was always very interested in it.
Right. Tenuta's, of course, is this Italian-themed a monument here in Kenosha. Are your own culinary interests, however, spreading farther than your Italian roots? I'm thinking so.
Well, I went back in like 2003. There wasn't really isn't any Italian cooking class schools, mostly French based. But after culinary school, I started working at different restaurants, and I really just got brought back to Italian food. And then back in 2006, I moved to Italy to train more and work in different restaurants there. And then from there, I really caught on to their traditions and their style of food and try to bring it back to Madison, using local products and fresh ingredients.
Explain the name of your restaurant, Pig in a Fur Coat.
Yeah, Pig in a Fur Coat. Alcohol was definitely involved a little bit in that. We wanted something a little catchy. And, we were just spitfiring a bunch of different names, and that one stood out.
It does indeed. So you're going to be back at the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival, and you're going to have a partner this time around, a guest chef by the name of Pierre Tyson. First of all, do you know Pierre, or are you going to be meeting him for the first time at this event?
No, we talked a couple times and we met in person not too long ago. Terrific chef. He has his own style, really rustic soul food, which I love. And I love food that people cook with their heart, not just out of a textbook. And he truly does that. He has a lot of passion and love behind his food. So I'm great to work with him and during the Jazz Fest. It's going to be amazing.
Going to be fun. Well, Pierre Tyson is sitting right here in our studios. So, Pierre, welcome. I think you said you grew up in Chicago. Is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Chicago.
So when did food start entering your life? I mean, were you cooking for your wrestling teammates too? Or otherwise, what's your story?
Well, I'm actually the son of a career food service worker. My mom has cooked here in Kenosha, different places like Dairyland Dog Track. She fed the kids over at Carthage College and also All Saints in Racine.
So, wow.
Yeah. I actually started cooking, I'd say probably when I was 10 years old.
Just for fun. And then at some point, when did it start to occur to you, I think I want to do this maybe for a living even?
Well, actually, it happened younger when I was, I'd say probably about 21 years old. I started toying around with the idea of starting a restaurant. But, I didn't have the cooking chops then. So I just did some studying, and eventually I enrolled in Gateway later on in life. And, I just kind of honed my skills there.
Wow. So, yeah, you are a graduate of our culinary program here. How long a program is that?
That's actually a two-year associate's degree program.
And was that did that give you the training that you needed?
Yeah, definitely. And more so of not just cooking, but also the business side. You know, it's more geared toward, you know, the business side of running a restaurant, because a lot of people can cook, but if you cook well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll have a successful restaurant.
Right. There are bills to pay and a lot of logistics to take care of.
Correct.
So tell us about the restaurant that you own here in Kenosha, Dildot's Diner.
Yes, Dildot's is located 5619 22nd Avenue. The name, it comes from my mother, actually. That's a nickname that was given to her by her grandkids, and it just stuck. So I wanted to kind of honor her with my first restaurant, so I named it after her.
Right.
And the people here in Kenosha, they basically know her by the name.
Now, you have to... forgive me for not having much personal encounter with soul food. And I can see from the T-shirt you're wearing from Dildot's Diner that soul food is the main thing. But as just the little you were explaining, that shouldn't be scary to somebody like me. It's actually probably a lot of food I would recognize and actually love.
Definitely, definitely. It's a lot of food that's cooked from home, you know, that you probably grew up on. I mean, different dishes like, you know, collard greens, black-eyed peas, red beans and rice, you know, fried chicken. We have a array of barbecue products, you know, rib tips, ribs, brisket. So, I mean, it's nothing that's unfamiliar or, you know, something that you've never seen before. It's just, it's basically something that you would find home, and we cook it like, you know, it's at home.
Wow. Well, that's great. Well, it's always great to meet a Gateway graduate, and especially one that's enjoying some wonderful success. Tell our listeners where Dildot's Diner is located.
Dildot's Diner is located at 5619 22nd Avenue. We are right before you get to the Uptown area.
Right. Very good. So, Daniel Bonanno, you and Pierre are going to be partners in the cooking studio. Tell our listeners what you are planning to do.
We're going to show some, we're going to demonstrate a couple of different things. Pretty much going to show how to use a grill, how to barbecue for the last of the summer months that we have. So we're going to do some blackened chicken. We're going to do some vegetable kebabs. I'm going to demonstrate how to make a perfect summer sangria to go with that. Some grilled pineapple, basically. So some easy and then quality food that people can enjoy at home, and they can easily do it.
Great. Pierre, what are you going to offer to the mix here?
I think we'll be bringing jerk chicken and also barbecue chicken, just basically showing you how to prepare the marinades and basically, you know, get it out there, get it on the grill, and
make it happen.
Yeah, make it happen.
Well, it sounds so exciting to have the TU side by side and offering up what's this wonderful addition to what's already a absolutely terrific event. So in the cooking studio, which I think happens at 1:30.
Kicks
so,
off the whole event at 1:30. That's
right,
correct.
The first thing then. So that's Chef Daniel Bonanno from Pig in a Fur Coat from Madison and Pierre Tyson from Dildot's Diner right here in Kenosha offering up the cooking studio. Tim, in the next minute, you can round out the schedule for the Harbor Park Jazz and Rhythm and Blues Festival.
Well, we're very excited about Ivy Ford coming from Waukegan, who has originally started and mentored by The Real Deal here in Kenosha. And I'll tell you something, this young lady is 24 years old, and she's got some soulful, growling, engaging, spirited music that if you don't get up and dance, and your heartbeat must be, your blood pressure must be low, because she's very, very talented.
Yeah, she's fabulous.
Fabulous. And we had a chance to go down and see the new blue band with Carly's Guy. And once again, you know, when your dad's a legendary blues artist like Buddy Guy, she certainly has the DNA of her father. She's very entertaining.
We'll hear from her in just a second here.
Yeah, so she's excellent. And, of course, Rebirth. Rebirth was here last year. So in addition to all that, you know, the nice thing that we've added that, you know, the generosity of our fans is we have a wine pull and auction items and raffle items that are kind of there for the enjoyment of our fans. We have some Bulls tickets and an overnight stay in Chicago. The Hampton Inn Majestic has been very good to us. couple tickets from Buddy Guys. We have the Bucks and the Brewers providing items in the Snap-on toolbox and a variety of Cirque du Soleil item out of Milwaukee. So, you know, we just try to add some different uniqueness to an outdoor event that you wouldn't typically see. And where you wouldn't expect an auction to be at an outdoor event, this has turned out to be a nice added touch to it. So we want folks to come, have fun, and keep in mind that when they're providing when they're purchasing items, wine and beer, that it is supporting our scholarships for our youth that we end up giving out in April or May in 2017. So we couldn't be more proud of our partners. I want to thank Dan and, of course, Chef Pierre for coming on. And, of course, I have to thank my sister for putting the cooking studio together. I'd be in trouble if I didn't thank my
sister. Well, you got to remember your sister. Tim Mahone, one of the powers that be behind this extraordinary event, the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival, happening on Saturday beginning at 1:30. And Chefs Daniel and Pierre, thank you for joining us as well. Great to have you here. Here's part two of today's morning show on WGTD. And that fabulous music making is courtesy of Chicago's New Blue Band. And they are one of the headliners that are going to be performing this weekend, tomorrow, at the Harbor Park Jazz and Rhythm and Blues Festival. And I am really profoundly excited and honored to have with me on the phone three of the members of New Blue Band. And they form the spine of this group in so many ways. Carlise Guy is the lead vocalist. Mark Maddox is lead guitarist. Dan Henley is on the drums. And a warm welcome to all three of you to WGTD's morning show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, especially after getting to listen to that. And I got to say something right off the bat. This is really not my kind of music. I'm more of a opera guy or a Mozart guy. So when there is something that, I mean, out of my own, let's say, comfort zone or what I kind of typically listen to for fun, when it grabs me, the way your performances grab me, you've accomplished something. And I absolutely love what you do. And I am excited to see you in person this weekend. And I'm, again, really happy to be talking to you. One of you needs to give us a little bit of a history lesson. And it sounds like it's a slightly complicated history of the New Blue Band. It sounds like the three of you got together a long time ago and then took a little break. Somebody explain your history.
So how we initially met was I was on a skiing trip with some really good friends of mine many years ago, and one of the young ladies that was on the skiing trip with us, we were just kind of, you know, goofing off and just singing different songs and stuff, and she asked me if, did I sing? And I was like, yeah, I love to sing, you know, and I was doing weddings and singing in church, and she said, I have a couple of friends that are looking for a vocalist, which was Danny and Mark at the time that I didn't know. And I went and auditioned for their band at the time, and then we kind of did a couple of things here and there, just trying to get it together. And we were all of us were parents and, you know, married and had families, so we were trying to work it out in between our jobs and things of that nature. And one thing kind of led to another, and sometimes timing is very important, so we kind of disbanded and kind of went off and was doing our own thing individually, and about 10 years ago, I think it was, we decided to just come back together and really, really try to make it happen now that our little ones are not so little anymore.
And this is a little more of a reasonable possibility than to...
Exactly. It's more of a reasonable possibility that we, you know, we always love doing it. So just getting together and sometimes just jamming just because again, we have families, we have jobs. It was just fun and easy. And then, lo and behold, my dad was having a conversation with me one day, and I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to put our band back together. We're going to open for you. And he was like, I'd love to have that happen. So with that, it just kind of spent off from there, and we've been going ever since.
Great. Well, I know this is something you're proud of, but I was determined not to bring it up in the first minute or two. So here we go at 4.5 minutes into the interview. We're going to talk, Carlise, for a moment about your legendary father, Buddy Guy, one of the greatest guitarists of all time. And I think I noticed that he is 80 years old and still around, still kicking, and obviously a big inspiration to you. Carlise, can you say a word about what it was like to grow up in a family with a legendary musician as your father? I mean, what was life like for you in that household, and how much did music play a really central role?
Music was always very prevalent, obviously, because he plays the instrument. In terms of me getting into it, it never occurred to me. I just, like I said, I always liked singing. And, you know, my dad would pull out his guitar, and the kids in the neighborhood would come, and we'd, you know, sit in the backyard, and he would teach some of the guys, you know, different licks, along with my brothers, which one of my brothers does travel with him and performs with him as well. And so I just kind of got off into singing on my own, and I really didn't know that there was some talent there until people started hearing me and making different comments about it. And then I started getting offers to sing at, like, birthdays, you know, private events and things like that. But as far as him being my father at home, I think because I've never known for him to do anything else but play the guitar, it was very normal for me. So when people ask what is it like being at home with him being Buddy Guy, the man that everyone else knows, he wasn't that kind of guy at home, you know. We would see the guitar occasionally, but not that much. You know, he was cooking, he was cleaning. as traumatic as it is for me, he was trying to comb hair at some point.
So
very hands-on. You know, he knew all of our school teachers. He participated in our school activities and anything he could do when he was not on the road. Hmm. And when he was gone, in our minds, he was just gone to work. You know, like some kids have parents that go away and they're in the service. You know, our dad was just on the road, you know, playing music. And then he'd come home and he'd bring gifts sometimes. And then sometimes he'd just come and, you know, he'd just relax with us. We'd go to the playground. We did very typical things like anyone else did, you know, slumber parties, birthday parties, the whole nine yards. It didn't occur to me that people really knew or how different he was in terms of, you know, my friend's parents being a plumber or an attorney or whatever, until we got older and we were able to kind of go with him more and, you know, be with him more as young adults and see him perform and the audiences and check out the different responses that we would get from them, that we realized, okay, you know, what he does is a little bit different than your typical 9-to-5.
Right, and pretty cool. But it sounds like life was very normal and life was very happy in the Guy household. By the way, how old were you, Carlise, when singing started to become such an important pursuit for you?
I want to say, well, this is really going back. We were rehearsing for our elementary school graduation, and the teacher talked about the entire class. She said, we sound like a bunch of sick chickens, and if we didn't sound any better, we were going to recite a poem for our graduation instead. Well, because we're, what, 13 years old, we're laughing. We really didn't care. And the next day, she pulled out the paper, and she said, you know what, we're going to try this one more time. She said, and if you guys sound as horrible as you did the day before, we're going to recite a poem for graduation. And then she turned around, and she said, Carlise, come here. And I thought she was calling me up, you know. I wasn't a class clown, but, again, it was a Catholic school. It was, what, all of 30 kids in the class. And she said, sing this song. So I did. And lo and behold, they clapped and it was like, oh, wow. And she said, that's the way I want you to sound.
Mm.
When she said that to me, I started doing it more. And then my friend's parents were like, I didn't know you could sing. And I said, I didn't know I could sing either. So then it was like, hey, you know, we're having a function at church. Can you come and sing for us at church? And I was like, yeah, because I just liked doing it. And then as I became a teenager, I think my late teens, when I met Danny and Mark and I auditioned for them, I was literally scared out of my skin because no one had ever asked me to be in a band before. I was just kind of doing things solo, you know, singing with the church choir. And, you know, in church, I'm not trying to be funny. It's a little bit different now. But then, you know, it was all about singing for the Lord. They didn't care whether you could hit a note or not. You were just singing.
Right.
When I auditioned with Mark and Danny, it took on a different life.
Sure.
For me, you know. I realized then in my heart that there were some things that I really wanted to do as far as music. But again, I was a single parent, and that came first for me. And whereas some people can juggle the two, it just wasn't a good thing for me to do as a single parent. So I just pretty much ended up finding a job, a 9-to-5, and that could take care of, you know, me and my family. And we did, you know, different things. So Danny worked for Playboy at the time. So we would get the opportunity to do some of their private events, you know, from a band standpoint. And then it kind of spent off from there, you know, how people just, you know, hear the word about a local band, and we would get hired to do different things around the Chicagoland area.
Well, it's a great story, and I love the way this has played out. Mark and Dan, I'm going to get your histories as well, but I want to have you talk about the first moment you heard Carlise sing. I mean, the first time she auditioned for you. Did you know right away? I mean, did your eyes light up and you thought, we have our singer right now? Or was it a little more of a work in progress where you saw her potential? I mean, what was that first encounter with Carlise and her voice like for you guys?
Danny, it wasn't the voice that we were looking at first. She was such an attractive girl. That was the first thing we saw. So at that point, everything was gravy after that. She sounded great. She was, I mean, all type of people. We got along, I mean, we got along like right off, man. Right off the bat, we just kind of hit it off. So, and from there, we worked, and we, like you said, we took that little break. And then we did a few things in between with some other people. And then we kind of pulled the old GMH, which was Guy, Henley, and Maddox. We pulled all that back together. So, we were really impressed with her when we first heard her. We knew she could sing, no doubt about that. It was just a matter of how we could make it work.
Absolutely.
You know what, Greg? Let me interject real quick with them. I want to tell you about this interview I had with them. You know, I just thought they were like my Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. You know what I mean? When I was auditioning for them. And I remember Mark asking me who was my musical influence, and I said, oh, my dad, he plays the guitar. And so they said, oh, okay. And I said, he's going to be in the park. I said, I may go and see him. And they were like, oh, okay. And I said, well, I'm not sure because, you know, I'm not, you know, big and hanging out in parks and things like that. So they decided to go and didn't tell me. And they said they were looking along. I don't know if you've ever been to Chicago doing, like, some of our blues fests or the Taste of Chicago. You have a plethora of musicians just hanging on corners and playing, and they have their little boxes for people to, you know, throw them money, you know, if they play a song they like. Danny and Mark went along looking at those guys. And so when they kept going and they got to the Patrillo Shell, which is the huge shell that was in Grant Park at the time, and they were way back towards the water, Mark says they heard them say, Chicago, are you ready? And they heard this loud roar. And then they heard them say, Buddy Guy. And they were like, he didn't say what we think, what we thought he just said. Called me up and they said, hey, you told us your dad was your musical influence. I said, yeah. They said, but you didn't tell us it was Buddy Guy. I said, you didn't ask.
That's right.
You
well,
said, who was my influence? And I said, my dad.
Mark, I think we need to talk about this really interesting connection. First of all, when did you first fall in love with the guitar?
You, Mark.
Oh, hey, Greg.
Mark, when did you first fall in love with the guitar?
Probably freshman year in high school, actually. I had a bunch of friends, and we couldn't play basketball. Dan could, but we couldn't. So we figured, well, let's get some guitars and practice after school and play guitar. So it was probably freshman year in high school.
And you've obviously developed an absolutely fantastic technique. You're a wonderful player. What is it like to be, however, treading on the hallowed ground of a legend like Buddy Guy? And what kind of connection have you been able to have with him over the years?
Well, just talk to him and watch him play and you know, study what he does. And that's one of the ways to learn from it, too. You know, after working in law enforcement for many years, I got an opportunity to actually, they called me up one day and said, hey, we need a talent buyer at the club. And I said, you do? And they said, yeah, we're asking you to do it. And quite naturally, I agreed to do it. A fantastic job.
And the rest is history, huh?
He forgot that part, Greg. The rest is history.
Right. So how about you, Dan? When did you first fall in love with the drums? How did that happen?
Oh, wow. I was in the second grade. I'm from Memphis. I see Elvis all the time. I'm a Memphis boy.
Hmm.
So I would be late for class almost every day because I would be watching the marching band. I'd get a little paddling every day. And I watched those guys, I watched the drummers, man, and I'd go home and make my mom mad because I'd set up the pots and everything and get me a couple of spoons. And man, I would go to work. And that didn't bode too well around the house. But that's kind of how like I got into it. And then I moved to Chicago, and my grandma, she helped me with some drum lessons. And then from there, it was history. So I've been hanging out with these guys for, Mark and I went to high school together. So that's when I really picked it up because I was in a marching band. And my cousin was a guitar player. And it's so funny. We went to all-black Catholic high school, but we had some of the baddest rock guitar players on the planet. Those guys were absolutely outstanding. So that's pretty much how I got into it. And then from there, I met Mark. He actually was playing with Minnie Riperton's nephew, Terrell Riperton. He pulled me in, and then from there, Mark and I have been together ever since then. That was probably when we were about 19.
Wow, very good. So Mark said you're a basketball player. So were there any points in time where drums and basketball were sort of vying for your attention and your energy, or was music always kind of supreme for you?
But the only cool thing is, man, I played ball for the same school that I was in the marching band. So that was we would practice during the daytime, and then after school we would practice doing basketball. So they both worked out real well for me.
Super. Well, the three of you obviously have an absolutely wonderful chemistry together. It's so exciting to see you and hear you. For those of you just joining us on this portion of the morning show, we're speaking with three members of the New Blue Band, and they're going to be performing tomorrow, Saturday, at the Harbor Park Jazz and Rhythm and Blues Festival in Kenosha. Carly Sky, Mark Maddox, and Dan Henley, who are the lead vocalist, lead guitarist, and drummer for this fantastic group, one of the headliners for this year's Jazz, Rhythm, and Blues Festival. Carlis, I wanted to play a little bit of something that shows you singing in kind of a different style than a Midnight Train, which we heard at the top of the interview. This is a song called You Can't Make Me Love You, and it's smooth and silky and absolutely beautiful. Can you just, ahead of us listening to that, can you just say a word about what you think about maybe on more kind of a technical level when you're singing? I mean, are you largely self-taught and kind of an instinctual sort of singer, or are there things that you really think about kind of technically as you approach these different styles?
You know what? I'm self-taught. So it's more, it's strictly feeling and emotion for me. I do think from a technical standpoint, it helps, you know, because there's no wrong or bad way in terms of training vocals when you want to express yourself through music. So depending upon the song, I can want to be a little bit more, you know, gritty and raunchy. That particular song, Midnight Train, is actually a song of my dad's that he did with Johnny Lang. And when I listen to my dad sing it, it's actually, to me, a little bit smoother than what I I'm interjecting with it. So what I try to do with that is listen. Again, it's not technical. I listen to other, you know, blues artists like Coco Taylor and Etta James, actually, and try to get some of that grit and raunchiness from them, listening to them vocally. And then I try to incorporate my own thing. I've always been a smooth jazz lover kind of thing for me, a style for music. But at the same time, just like you were saying earlier when we were talking, I actually like all types of music. But then when I started getting a little bit out of my comfort zone with the more gritty and raunchy stuff, I just kind of played around with it, you know. But technically, I do think it's healthy for me, and I'm actually doing it now, is dealing with a vocal coach in terms of more training from a muscle standpoint. Making sure there's certain things that I would love to do, and in my mind, I hear me doing it, but I know that there's got to be more to it than just what I'm trying to do. So.
Sure. Well, and that's maybe going to help ensure that you can do this for many, 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 many years to come.
Exactly.
Let's listen to a little bit of You Can't Make Me Love You. And again, this is Carlise Guy and Mark Maddox and Dan Henley, also the new blue band coming to Kenosha. Oh, that's really, really great singing. I just love that so much. And by the way, I don't know if you're always singing with the same young singer as kind of a vocal partner, but I sure love the sound of those two voices together. And that must be really, really fun as well, to not only be hooking up with Mark and Dan and your other instrumentalists, but also the special fun of singing together with another singer.
Yeah, it is. I love harmony. Her name is Kenyatta Gaines, and yeah, we actually do quite well together. We do have a couple of other ones that we have used in the past, and what we do try to do is when we're utilizing other vocals, for which I'm hoping Dan and Mark get it together and start doing some background with me as well. We look for someone that can, you know, complement what is there already.
Can you say a word about how well you get along when it comes to functioning as a group and the decisions you have to make about how we're going to do this song, or are we going to take this gig, or, I mean, just all the nuts and bolts that are involved in a busy, successful group. Just how harmonious an undertaking is this, or are there the occasional spats that even happen in the most loving of families?
You know what, the wonderful thing that we have, and it's really a blessing, you're right, there are spats, but the beauty about Danny, Mark, and myself, I mean, we could stand and go toe-to-toe, and we'll turn around and go, like, what's for dinner, because we're hungry, you know. we don't carry anything away from the studio. I mean, we say what we have to say, and, you know, there's no lingering anger or anything like that. But at the end of the day, Mark Maddox is our musical director, and he pretty much makes most of the decisions.
Yes, it is.
He makes most of the decisions, and we're comfortable with that. One of the things that I realized about the three of us, we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and we realize what they are. Even if we interject and have an opinion about one of what we consider is a strength of ours, and we respect that decision, whether we agree with it or not, we decided that a long time ago. So, yes, we do have our spats. Yes, we do have our disagreements. But at the end of the day, we always come to a happy medium with whatever the decision is.
Hmm.
That's been a blessing for us, because I know a lot of people can't say that. I know there are a lot of bands, and I could be wrong, I'm going off of reading and hearsay, that a lot of bands don't even associate with one another outside of performing. And that's not true for us. We talk daily. We do dinners. Our kids hang out together. You know, we really are a family-style band. And at the end of the day, that's what matters to us more than anything.
Hmm. That's great. I appreciate all that you're saying about the way you're trying to do this. I wonder about, let's bring Mark and Dan in on this. We talked earlier about the fact that you guys came together for a while as GMH, and then real life sort of intruded, and it just made sense for you to kind of take a break, and it sounds like it was a break that happened for years, and then you came back again together about 10 years ago as the new Blue Band. What kind of difference do you think that made to get together and then call it quits for a while and then get together again? Do you think that is a significant factor in why you are such a tight, successful group now?
The maturity factor. In fact, we had all gone on to different professions, and one day Dan called me up and asked me to help him with some music. I said, my guitars are in the closet. What do you mean? So he's actually the reason for all this, because he called me up. I'm like, okay, I'll help you. I said, but I don't know what you want me to help you with. You know, so he pulled me back into it, and then Carlise got pulled back into it, and then we had the rebirth of GMH, which became New Blue Band featuring Carly Scott.
Hey, so, hey Greg, the big question was, he asked me, could he help me? He's like, do you think I would be a help? And I was like, are you kidding me? Mm. Like, absolutely. And then from there, we've been, that was like in 2000, right?
It just started to come together, yeah. So.
Mm. Well, that it has. I noticed on either your website or your Facebook page that you guys, I think, just played or are soon to play a major gig down in Brazil. And with the Olympic Games being played in Rio de Janeiro right now, I want to ask you about your connection with Brazil. Is that something that already happened?
We were there last year, I think it was. We were there. And it was a festival that they were trying to put together for this year as well. But the Olympics did kind of interrupt that. So it's still in the making. They just thought for what they were trying to do, and with the Olympics being there, it might have been a bit much. I'm assuming it's some of the people who are doing the funding for the whole concert that they were trying to put together. So I never got the total story or make on it, but I do know that the Olympics being there and the companies that were financing the festival, the music festival at the time, I think there was some interruptions with that, so it was kind of put off for a later date and time.
Was
we
that a...
Played there,
yeah, we played before, right. Which is why they were trying to bring it, to do the whole thing again.
Hmm. So what is it that you... Are there aspects about what you do that are not so fun? I mean, or is this, by and large, 99%... fun and excitement all the time?
It's 95% fun. 5% is moving equipment. Is not fun.
We don't like that. That we don't like.
Too much exercise, huh?
Yes, it is. Knees are not as good as they used to be.
Right.
I don't have to move it, but I sympathize with them. I do understand.
So do you foresee yourselves being the new blue band for many, many years to come?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're pretty much here to stay. You know, the only thing that can change us is God. If God doesn't change us, we're here. Hmm.
Carlise Guy, Dan Henley, and Mark Maddox are the central trio of the New Blue Band, one of the headlining acts for this weekend's Harbor Park Jazz and Rhythm and Blues Festival in Kenosha.